I don't know if you ever thought about, again, another major problem that we have in science, and that is that if the world is really material, we'll never know it. It is not testable. It is not something that's accessible with our limitations, that's accessible in principle to scientific investigation. We are fooling ourselves thinking that sciences are studying the material universe. Astronomy is not a science about stars. The astronomy is a science of human experiences of what we call stars. Mineralogy is not a science about stones. Mineralogy is a science about human experiences with what we call stones. And it deals also with things like colors and so on, which we know are not around. Even physical terms, what we call colors is a perception of different levels of frequencies. There's nothing around like colors. This is a purely subjective term. And there's no way of getting beyond that, because whatever we experience is a human experience. This is the old Kantian problem between phenomena and noumena, or so-called things in themselves, Dinge an sich. If I'm perceiving Jim, you know, what I'm supposedly doing, something in me, this is not defined in science what it is interpreting biochemical changes in my cortex, which were created by light bouncing off what I perceive as Jim, exciting my retina, translated into a neural impulse, and ultimately doing some biochemical changes in my cortex. And something in me reads that, works with it. As a result of this process, I come up with something that even remotely resembles what is really out there, is not a very convincing hypothesis. Okay. So we have this fact that if the world is material, we'll never know it, because all we know is our experience of the world. I don't even know if I'm experiencing the way you are, if what is green for you is also green for me. But we somehow agree, by and large, with some minor friction problems and so on, we agree on certain things. This is a chair, it's there, and so on. But we know that it cannot possibly be accurate reflection of something objective that we all are experiencing. There are tremendous varieties or differences in how we experience different things. So there is this other notion now coming. We are fields of consciousness, transcending time and space, having no limitations, transcending linear causality. You can experience it in meditation, you can experience it in spiritual emergencies, you can experience it in the breathing, you can experience it under hypnosis, in a trance state, you can experience it when you take psychedelic sessions and so on. So what we have to do now, because we know those things are real, a person can be dying and consciousness detaches from the brain and they would go and perceive something in the other part of the building. Blind people can see in an out-of-body state and so on. So what we end up with is some kind of strange paradox, a paradoxical definition of who we are, and that definition will be very strangely similar to what physicists like Fred Wolf came up with in relation to subatomic matter and also light, and that is the wave-particle paradox. Subatomic matter is particles and waves at the same time. Light is photons or electromagnetic waves. In different experimental arrangements and the different circumstances, sometimes it's more appropriate to think about what you're seeing as photons. In some other experiments, it's more like light. And Niels Bohr, who tried to solve this paradox, came up with what's called complementarity principle. In order to understand what light is, what subatomic matter is, you have to simply accept a paradox. Those are two complementary aspects of the same phenomenon. And you, no matter what you do, you will not get what Einstein always wanted, which is a visualizable model. You can really pin it down. Say, what is it? I mean, a particle is occupying a certain space, has a certain momentum, has certain coordinates. Waves are spread all over the place. So, and your brain is saying, you know, is it a particle or is it a wave? It cannot be both. Only this is the best we can do. We can say those are two complementary aspects. Sometimes under certain circumstances we see more of the one, sometimes we see more of the other. Now we can do something like this on the level of consciousness research and sciences that study human beings. We can say a human being is a Newtonian object, it is a biological machine, and it is also an infinite field of consciousness transcending time, space, and linear causality. Those are two complementary aspects of who we are. They manifest under different circumstances. And to really have some comprehension who we are, you have to accept those two with the paradox that's involved and with a sense of complementarity. Under certain circumstances, which means in what I call the hamburger stand, rush hour consciousness, it will be more appropriate to think about yourself as a body. You have a skin, you inhabit your skin, you have certain limitations and so on. In non-ordinary states of consciousness, that self-definition is not appropriate. You will find out that you don't have those boundaries. Those boundaries are not absolute. You might not experience yourself as solid. You break down into all kinds of energy fields. You find out that you can be the person over there. You can be an animal. You can become the dancing Shiva and so on. So you have a very different sense of identity. So those are two complementary aspects of who we are. And each of them has a kind of mode of consciousness that's associated with it. So we have one aspect of ourselves, which is the Newtonian biological thinking machine. Let's call that C, consciousness. Let's give it a name. Let's call it hylotropic. So I give it a little index here. Hylotropic, hyle in Greek means matter. Trepein means oriented towards. Heliotropism is the property of the plant of moving towards the sun. Heliotropic. So hylotropic means matter-oriented, moving towards matter. So in the terms of the cosmology that I was talking about, that's a movement from the void and the Satchinananda into incarnation, into the world of matter, into the world of phenomenal manifestation. So we call it hylotropic. And these experiences in this state of consciousness will systematically confirm that you are body ego, that you are skin encapsulated ego, that you live in a Newtonian world where objects are solid, two objects cannot occupy the same space. Space is three-dimensional, time is linear, everything is cause and effect, and so on. And if you don't leave that state, this is what it's going to be for you. You might believe that that's really the way it is. You can go into deep meditation, into hypnosis, into the breathing, into psychedelic states, into spiritual emergency. Suddenly, this is not true. You are in a state that we can call holotropic. Holos means whole, and trepein again means moving towards. So this means moving towards totality, moving towards wholeness. So in the cosmology, it would be a movement from separate identity back towards undifferentiated unity, melting of boundaries, experiencing bigger and bigger holes, and so on. So we are some kind of dynamic, we are a stage in which these two movements are in constant sort of dialectic interchange. We mentioned before that the undifferentiated cosmic consciousness wants to incarnate, wants to become many, and when we end up on the other side, it's too much of a hassle, too much of a pain, and something in us wants to go back. We have the need to transcend. So these experiences in the holotropic consciousness would systematically confirm, if you have enough of them, you are not solid, you are a system of energy. You can go beyond that, you find out that the world is just an orchestration of experiences, or if it isn't, that's all you can say about it, as I mentioned before. This is one of the major exercises in Vipassana meditation, that you sit and you analyze your experience of the world. And all you know is there are visual experiences, there are acoustic experiences, there are tactile experiences, pains and so on. And you make, out of it, you make the image of the material world. But all we have is experiences. But like in the movies, when I was talking about the cowboy or the Indian falling of the horse, they are orchestrated in such a way that they give appearance of causing each other. Now, if this is true, if we have these two aspects and these two corresponding states of consciousness, none of them is pathological. They're two complementary aspects. A physicist would not call light that manifests as waves a psychotic photon. It would say a sick photon. It would say at this point in this particular experimental arrangement, Light is showing its wave aspect. In another arrangement, it will show its particle aspect. But both of those are legitimate aspects of the system that we are working with. So there's nothing pathological about having holotropic type of experiences. It can be bad if it's happening in the wrong context, like that Albuquerque airport. That's not the place to exercise your holotropic aspects. You want to know that you're in the right place when it is happening. But if you are in the right place, it can be extremely educative, it can be healing, it can be transformative. There's nothing essentially pathological about it. So the idea would be, if it is true that we have these two aspects, to accept them, to cultivate those aspects, to complement what you're doing in everyday life with meditation, with participation in rituals, in experiential psychotherapy, whatever. You want to know that, you want to honor that aspect. Each of those forms is good for something and bad for something else. As I mentioned the other day, if you are a pilot landing a 747 in Kennedy Airport, and you want to be in the hylotropic mode. That's not the time to find out that you were an embalmer in ancient Egypt 2,000 years ago. At that time, you're also not interested what it feels like when an elephant gets a peanut into his trunk. It's not also time to have an out-of-body experience and sort of float around the Empire State Building. You want to also know that the runway is solid, that you can rely on it, that you can trust the time-space coordinates, which are also coordinated with some of the other happenings around you and so on. You really want to be in the hylotropic mode. Now, if you stay in that, if you never leave it, which is the ideal of normalcy in Western culture, the best psychiatrist should be one who has never had any holotropic states, maybe with the exception of some dreams. You know, we hide it from each other in staff meetings that we ever had those experiences, because that would disqualify us. You know, a professional, you know, should never have that. He just treats the other poor things who happen to have these kinds of experiences. And what makes you expert is that you never experience, so you don't really know what they are going through. Which is different from the shamanic. The idea in the shamanic, or the idea of a guru in India, is you go to somebody who has been through what you are now going through, and they got through it to the other side, so they can tell you from their own experience what is happening to you. To go in a holotropic state of consciousness to somebody who has never left the hylotropic mode, I don't care what degrees they have, I don't care what books they have read, is like having sexual problems and going to a pre-adolescent, you know, discussing orgasm. And this is the whole idea, you know, to use for work in certain mental health facilities and so on, for working with people who are in psychotic states, somebody who has been there before, so that person can help from a very different place, or recovering people helping others in 12-step programs and so on, have a very different possibility of understanding and treating than those who have never ever faced that problem. This is alien to the Western type of thinking. So the idea would be then cultivate those two states and be able to find right circumstances in which you have one or the other mode of consciousness. If you want to heal yourself, you want to heal others, I'm not talking about body mechanics, I'm talking about healing others, you want to do it in a holotropic state of consciousness. You don't want to do it in this state of consciousness. If you want to tap deep sources of creativity, the major creative inspirations, inventions, if you read the history of creativity, always came from holotropic state. The person might have spent 5 years researching, studying, experimenting, but the real solution came then when they were waking up from a dream, or like Heisenberg when he was sick with hay fever so he couldn't see. That's where he got the ideas about quantum physics. The idea for an experiment that meant the discovery of adrenaline and the Nobel Prize came in a dream, and so on. We know the story of organic physics, the story of discovery of benzene that came again in a vision to Kekulé when he saw an Ouroboros, and he got the idea how the carbon atoms might be linked in the ring. So just the last thing here, there is an interface here that you want to stay away from, and that is when you are experiencing these two at the same time. In other words, you are in a context where you're supposed to be hylotropic, but you happen to have holotropic experiences. And then you have an enclave in your everyday life that we call psychopathology. You get an asthmatic attack here, and nobody's choking you, and you cannot breathe, which is an alien enclave in this way of existing in the world. Now, if you now use a technique which would take you into the underlying holotropic state, the experience that is trying to come through, you'll find out that you actually are drowning when you were 14 years ago, and you are dragging that situation to here. So the choking belongs to a different system of time-space coordinates. You're living in two places and two different time frameworks at the same time. You're mixing those two. And then you find that deeper behind it, that you're really stuck in the birth canal. You feel sort of still more in the birth canal than you feel here. And behind it, there could be an experience of being hanged somewhere. So there are bits of pieces of yourself that you left somewhere else that really didn't make it. You're not fully in this situation, and those states are trying to come into your present consciousness and sort of complete themselves. So the overlap here would be the situation that you want to stay away from. If you have this, the idea is to create a situation where you can go fully into this, find out what it is, experience it, then it takes you automatically back to the ordinary reality, and the enclave will not be there. It sort of fully expresses itself. So what you get here now is a kind of dynamic tension. Something in the hylotropic is coming back to holotropic, and the holotropic is trying to go back to the hylotropic, which is basically an expression of those two movements that we were talking about, from Satchinananda into creation and from creation back. So we have this kind of battlefield, and when those two modes of consciousness get mixed up, we experience them both together. That's what we call then psychopathology. If you can get it in a pure form, it is an authentic form of consciousness that's behind it. It is not a distortion of this one. If you see this one as just the only authentic, the only legitimate one, then anything that comes, whether it comes in this form, will be seen as pathology, something that doesn't belong. But if you have context to experiment with this mode, you will find out that they are legitimate experiences of a different kind. There's nothing wrong with either of those, but you don't want to experience them simultaneously. So I think this is all we can do in the time that we had. And, Okay.